The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Go to am1260therock.com and click on the orange donate button.
The humanity of the priest is a bridge to encountering Christ and should not be a barrier. People always say, like, well, if you weren't a priest, what would you be doing? And I'm like, it's hard for me to think of anything other than what I'm doing.
That's what we're striving to discern, is what is God's plan, his dream, his will, his desire for me, where I'm going to be most fulfilled. And it really is through living a sacramental life that is absolutely going to support that.
When you're married, you have to realize it's not just you anymore. It's you and your wife and God.
If you desire to be truly happy, then your life should not be about you.
Welcome to God Calling, our locally produced program that explores the various vocations available to Catholics in all walks of life. Now here's your host, Paul Orlowski.
As you just heard, this is God Calling. I am Paul Orlowski joining you once again this week, and thank you for joining us. Father John Mosier is joining us, and he's got an interesting story to tell. He is currently the pastor of St. Charles Borromeo in Salmon, Idaho. And Father, you have had a lots of twists and turns in your life, the priesthood clearly, obviously an early call, later answer, the military, sadly losing a wife. But it all began at a very early age from what I have read about you, and that is at age 11, you really took the bull by the horns, and you wrote to the bishop inquiring about joining the seminary. Is that true?
Paul, thank you, and thank you, listeners of The Rock. What a great ministry you all have in the surrounding area of Cleveland, Ohio. And that's true. I grew up, my siblings and I, there were six of us, grew up in Findlay, Ohio, on the west side of Hancock County. St. Michael's Catholic Church, shout out to the Defenders, St. Michael Defenders out there. And yes, when I was 11, I did write to the Bishop Diocese of Toledo and inquired about seminary. That would have been, oh my goodness, 1970, do the math on that, 72.
Mm-hmm.
And he generously wrote back, I should say, with a letter and a rosary, and it said, pray this and come see us in 7 years.
Wow.
It was more engaging than that. But it jumped to the end of the story in a sense, Paul. That letter, that bishop's response, and my ordination letter from my bishop, Bishop Peter here in Idaho, hang side by side in a frame. So, hey, God can make crooked paths straight.
What led you to Idaho?
Oh, gosh, that's, again, advanced in life. When I, long life of growing up in Findlay, then matriculated to university, then commissioned into the Marines, served in the Marines a number of years, back to grad school, then a career in consulting and in the biomedical engineering world, which I spent most of my life in, was in biomed, not research, but on the design and build side of the equipment. And coincident with that was marriage with my beautiful wife, Jackie. We were married 14 years, and part of my career, I was based in the greater Portland area, Portland, Oregon, but Portland, as many know, is rainy and cold
mm-hmm.
in the winter, and Jackie was a Texas girl. So we would escape to Boise, Idaho during some winter months. We'd come over for a long weekend and enjoy the sun, still cold, but enjoy the bright sun of Boise, and just really fell in love with the community. So after she had passed away, I worked for a couple more years, but then just felt the call, as well as the encouragement, the affirmation from other people in my life about considering priesthood, even though at the time I was 49 years old, and contacted the Diocese of Boise, and their vocations apparatus ministry was brilliant and very helpful, welcomed me in. Off I went to seminary. So I entered the Diocese of Boise because of a kind of a sentimental attachment, because it was an experience I'd had with my amazing wife when mm-hmm. we were living in Portland. Beautiful. I'm so glad. God has blessed that in so many ways.
Well, let's dial back to that four-year-old. What led you to write that letter? What was your home life with your mom and dad as far as prayer? And
Thank you for that, Paul. I was 11 at the time, but what it was a life lived out in the Catholic faith. My parents were very expressive of their Catholicism. The St. Michael's community in Findlay is still very well led and very strong. I have no idea how big that parish is now, but it must number more than 5,000 families. It's got to be.
Wow.
It's the only, it's the only Catholic parish, I think, in the immediacy of Findlay. And so life lived out. My grandparents, on both my father and mother's parents, were very Catholic. We had active participation in the Mass. I attended St. Michael's Catholic School. I was an altar server. So it was this very active presence in the faith, as it's expressed through the beauty of our Catholic faith. And that inspired me then, as I think a lot of young men, I would be not unique in that. Many young men who have the encounter at that age, and this would have been, as I said, the early 70s, to consider that. And so I wrote that letter, you know, as a 11-year-old, thinking, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned, the bishop at the time in Diocese of Toledo wrote back with that invitation that basically said, at 11, you're pretty young. You know, at that time, admission to seminary would have begun at 18. Then life happened. I did not enter seminary at 18. I entered seminary at 49.
Well, it took a few years.
Happened in between.
God didn't lose your letter.
No, I kept it. And, you know, like many of us, when we head off, when the parents kick us out of the house at 18 at that time, anyway, it ends up in a box, and then decades pass, and you rediscover that box in your many moves. And I found that letter, and it was interesting. I found that letter actually while I was in seminary, because I had downsized from a life of a house and all these things to basically everything fitting in my car.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one artifact from my childhood I found, and I said, well, that's going to be handy. And sure enough, when I was ordained, I said, you know what, those two belong side by side.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I have all the old report cards and this and that, and one after the other, the nuns used to check, does not work to ability, does not work to ability, does not work to ability. Oh, my gosh.
But look at you now. I think those nuns would shine on you now, Paul, and say, look at this great ministry of hope you're bringing.
Well, they probably still correct my grammar sometimes, or handwriting. Definitely handwriting, Father, because it slants backwards for some reason, and they hated that. But anyway, I digress for sure. You, when you did enter the military, I mean, you were deployed to the very first was in the Gulf War, and eight Marines died during your first deployment.
The end of my career and the wisdom of our government, what we do is we take guys like myself who grew up in the flatlands of Hancock County, where it's flat and highest elevation is interstate, you know, overpass over Interstate 75. And you send them through the Marines. I was sent to an Arctic skiing unit.
Oh, boy.
I go through the, you know, indoc into the military. You go through OCS. When I graduated my undergrad, I was commissioned as a second lieutenant. And then you go through about a six-month program called the basic school. That's all Marine officers go through that. And then your follow-on schooling. And ultimately, your first assignment. My first assignment was with an expeditionary unit, and we were deployed to the mountains of northern Norway. So, hey, here's a flatlander who gets to learn how to ski, carry heavy things on your back, and live up in those mountains. They're called the Norwegian Alps, and it's stunningly beautiful up there, but about 300 miles north of the Arctic Circle. And we were up there every year and had an assigned sector and mission. This is in the late 80s when the Soviet Union still existed, and that's why the Marines, as part of a larger NATO force, were present up there. In fact, they're still the case. You still have Marine units, part of a multinational effort deployed up there. It's part of a northern sector defense, if you will. But that's what I did. And mm-hmm. then, yes, at the towards the end of my initial term, the difficulties arose in Kuwait. Saddam Hussein had sent his forces into Kuwait. The United States, as part of a larger coalition, responded and had the privilege of participating in that, and it teaches you a lot about life when those you're called upon to do your job, and in the privilege of leadership, those young Marines, just an absolute privilege. The great mentors I had who served, who guided me and my peers, and then the privilege of the young men and women you were honored to serve next to. It was a tremendous joy.
Father, we're going to stop you right there. We'll be back with more on God Calling right after these messages. Father John Mosier joining us today on God Calling. He is the pastor at St. Charles Borromeo Church, and that is in Salmon, Idaho. Father, you're talking about being in the military. At some point, you got out of the military. Now, were you married while you were in the military or afterwards?
It was afterwards, Paul, and what a story there. I had served 6 years, and after the first Gulf War we were just speaking about in the earlier segment,
mm-hmm.
I left active duty and transitioned to what we call a reserve status, but then it entered into grad school. I entered grad school in a joint degree program, and One of those degrees was in Texas A&M, Giga Maggie's, down in College Station, Texas. And then one of the degrees was in a school in Linz, Austria. And it was a joint degree program in business and in engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And completed that three-year program and then entered into a career in really the research field. Although my first job right out of grad school was in Cleveland, Ohio. I had a privilege of working for a firm that's still there, a long-standing, 100-year-old firm called Ernst & Young, and I was
sure.
part of their management consulting practice, and Jackie and I made our home in Twinsburg, just southeast of...
Oh, absolutely. Twinsburg, Twins Days.
Twins Days, yeah.
That's right.
So Jackie and I lived in Twinsburg, and I'd make the run up 77 up into Cleveland, and we worked in the Huntington Building downtown, but spent a couple years doing that, and that taught me a great deal about business in general, and organizations, et cetera. But that led to, because of the degree experience I'd had, that led to a opportunity with a firm in the nanotech industry. In general, we call it nanotech, but the specific discipline was electron microscopy and flow cytometry. Those are two research disciplines in both, you know, high image resolution or high resolution imaging and well as blood cell analysis. And so I then spent the bulk of my work career, which continued for 21 years. I spent the vast bulk of that in the nanosciences of mm-hmm. electron microscopy and flow cytometry. And I was not a researcher. Rather, I was on the build side, where a researcher or a scientist would say, here's what I need this machine to do, relative mm-hmm. to the research pursuits. And then the colleagues I worked with, we'd come up with a way to make the machine
yeah.
do that and then go build it. And that's what I spent most of my life doing. And what a joy, because I got to, through expat assignments, live in different countries for a number of years and travel the world. And at that time, was able to share that with Jackie. Back to the segue to her, I met her in grad school. So I was at Texas A&M where I met Jackie, who had grown up in Texas. And so she stole my heart the day I saw her. And I convinced her a year later to marry me. And a year after that, we got married in her church.
Mm-hmm.
Right in Plano, Texas, at
okay.
St. Elizabeth Ann Seton in Plano. Yep.
Wow. And sadly, after 14 years, she passed away.
She did. She did, Paul. But there's a Christ present in that moment. And here's what I mean. Jackie was very authentic in her faith, far more than I was. I mean, she was very firm in her beliefs. And even the day we received her cancer diagnosis, she was only 34 years old. We're sitting in a doctor's office. She squeezes my hand, and she was so, I'm a mess, but it's her diagnosis, not mine. So I can't imagine what she's experiencing. But she was so confident in God's presence in that moment, so courageous in God's presence in that moment. And then for the next 6 years, because we were married for 8 years, and then she was diagnosed, and she lived an additional six. Those next 6 years were absolute witness of faith, because she knew the reality of her particular manifestation of the illness. That's not true for most people, praise God. For most people, that can be a scary diagnosis, but there's some amazing solutions out there. If your listeners are hearing that, if you're having that experience, just stay encouraged. Just stay encouraged. The world of medicine is advancing very fast. But what she brought me was a testimony of faith that humbled me in her confidence in God's provision and God's plan. And then 6 years did conclude, and she did die, and part of the vocation story was in the 3 days prior to her death, I was fortunate she could be home in her house with hospice care. She was sitting close to her because we had her set up in a room in the house. She said that to me very directly. Jackie was a writer. She was a story writer. She's an amazing storyteller in her works. And she said to me, you need to promise me to tell his story. And I thought she was referring to some of the unfinished manuscripts she had sitting around the house, because there were several piles of papers. like most talented writers, they're not working on one story. They usually have a few in the process. But she was referring actually to Christ. And she got really stern with me, and she grabbed my hand again and said, no, you have to promise me to tell his story. And she meant the story of Christ. You tell his story. And she knew of my earlier life, where I had expressed an interest in priesthood. She knew of my being raised in the faith and what that meant, the centrality of that. in my life, and so that really affected me. Her like sternness right before she went to glory. That just, you do this. You're mm-hmm. accountable. You do this. So after she passed away, I worked a couple more years, and then that's when I contacted the diocese and said, "Hey, I don't know if I'm even a candidate. If I'm too old. If I'm a fit. I have no idea. But I just want to share that interest." And the Diocese of Boise was tremendous. A guy named Father Caleb Vogel, who's now the Vicar of Clergy, but he was so engaging in his embrace and walked me through what's actually a pretty simple process, and it matriculated into seminary about 2 months after I met him. So they made the process beautiful. I'll say this, Paul, as a capstone to that narrative, that story.
Yes.
The day I was ordained was June 6, 2019, and I was gifted a chalice, which is fairly common for a newly ordained priest to receive a chalice. And on the bottom of it, that's the inscription. It says, "Tell his story, Jackie."
Wow.
And when I celebrate Mass, I have the great privilege of, you know, elevating the precious blood, but I look at the bottom of that chalice and I see that promise, "Tell his story." And I think, gosh, hey, Father John, you better do your job. You better tell his story. Not only because a beautiful wife asked you to, but that's a promise you made through this privilege of ordination. So tell his story.
Sounds like she told you to, didn't ask you to. I'm glad you told that, Father, that story, because I'm not sure I would have been able to make it through.
It's the balance we have. You know, we kind of unanticipated commentary, but I'll offer this briefly because you reach a big listening audience. Is, listen, hard things are going to happen in life, and difficulties in relationships, difficulties in the workplace, certainly unanticipated illnesses, unexpected death. These are real, it's called real life. It's hard. But God's present in each of those moments. Those aren't empty, happy words. It's real. God's in those moments. And what he does is use those moments as an affirmation of his presence. And I think if we orient our view to not, God, why did you do this, but where are you in this? I mean, a lot of great people of faith have said that. Not, why did you do this, God? Why is this happening? But change the question. Where are you in this? Help me see you in this. It makes our engagement in the moment different. It changes our orientation to the experience. And she taught me that. My beautiful wife taught me to not challenge God. Why are you doing this, God? She's so young. But instead say, well, where is he in this?
Mm-hmm.
What am I supposed to do with this situation?
Yeah.
And she led me in that affirmation of faith. And I would I be a priest now without her? Well, I couldn't be a priest with her. That's true.
That's very true.
So that's canon law. But I don't know if I'd be a priest without her, because she lived the testimony of faith that led me to this moment. And so I can tell you with certainty, God was in that moment. He was in that marriage. He was in that moment, even though I didn't always see it.
Yeah. Father, stay right where you are, and our viewers, our listeners, hopefully will stay right where they are as well on God Calling right here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Father John Mosier is joining us. Father, something I read about you after your passing of your wife and back to the work world, that you kind of had a burning question. Is there more to life? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I can. I can't remember the context of why I said that or what the question came up. However, is there more to it? So here's the strength and beauty of the Christian faith in macro, and then the sacramental life of the Catholic faith, and it's this. It has to do with an orientation to life and worldview. If you begin with the idea that Christ, Son of God, the creator of all things, and that God the Father willed all life to be, meaning every life ever conceived ever is through the will of the Father, that gives one an orientation that's different than a person who believes it's all just a random set of events, that there's no master design to this. So if you begin with the idea that God willed you into existence, that already separates you into a body of believers that understand the value of life and the sanctity of life and the importance of every life, right? That
mm-hmm.
helps. Then, through the sacramental life of the Church, we encounter the transcendent. So we encounter the transcendent in the Mass, most especially, obviously, most especially through the Eucharist. There's this real encounter with the living God, really, truly, substantially present in the Eucharist. So the idea being that here I am, this imperfect person, whether it's as a priest or laity, doesn't matter, this imperfect person, willed into existence by God, is invited into this encounter with the real presence of Christ. And that is so awesome and daunting in its idea that, wait a minute, you mean in my imperfection, in all the things that I'm self-aware of that are flawed in my life, that same person has, first of all, the opportunity for reconciliation through the sacraments, and then the opportunity for encounter with the Eucharist, the real presence of the risen Christ, right now, in this moment, in this building, in this Mass, I get to have that encounter. Yes, and the answer to that is, that's true. That truth allows us to navigate the day-to-day that says, well, I should be working on making myself better, right? Gospel tells us that. Be holy. Be holy as your Father in heaven is holy. Okay, that's a big ask. But we're asked to do that, and then we're equipped to do that through the infusion of grace, infusion of the Holy Spirit. But the concept being, wait a second, in my imperfection, in my flawed state, I'm able to encounter the real presence of Christ, open-armed. Christ says, come to me, all of you. That idea allows me to navigate life that says there's more to life than this material existence. There's more to life than this moment. There's more than life than this experience at work where a customer or a colleague or a boss is unhappy. Mm-hmm. There's more to life than this moment of illness. There's more to life than my finances being upside down. There's more to it than that. It's an eternal view that our faith gives us. And I think I just had this conversation recently here in Salmon, where I live. One of the great beauties of the Catholic faith, among many, is the tangibility, the sensorial tangibility of our faith. Christ is present in the private prayer. If you're sitting along the Cayuga or on the shore there in Cleveland or walking in the woods, in the Emerald Necklace Park, Christ is there. He's there in those private moments of prayer. He's there in a prayer with a friend. He's there over a cup of coffee with a colleague sharing a moment. God's in that moment. What the Catholic experiences, though, is the very sensorially engaging transcendence of our faith through the sacraments. That's what makes being a Catholic so privileged and so special, is it engages all of the human faculties in order to encounter the transcendent. Christ is as present in any other faith community you can name. Christian faith community, Christ is present in that faith community. Absolutely so. What the Catholic Church offers us is the access to the transcendent in more easily engaging ways. That's why our Lord uses parables. The last three or four Sundays, right, we've been listening to the parable of the seeds and weeds and wheat. Why does he do that? Because it was a very accessible example for the listener. They're looking at a field of wheat. They're looking at a field that may be intertwined with wheat and weeds. They're looking at how seeds germinate. The constancy of reference to sheep and lambs. Why? Because they're surrounded by them. It was very tangible,
sure,
to the listening audience. So our sacraments do that for us. They engage the senses to enable us to experience this transcendent.
Having been married, Father, do you find it easier to counsel people when it comes to marriage or marital problems or things like that? One of the quotes I read from you, I don't remember exactly where I saw it, but because I was married, you can be very reflective of all the dumb things I did as a husband. So you can probably relate a lot better than maybe some, but you know.
Let me offer this. I don't know if it makes me more effective, because one of the most effective ministers or counselors, if you will, in my life was a Catholic priest who'd obviously never been married.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one who was so beautiful pastorally to Jackie in the hospital and myself as well. This poor guy would come to the hospital around 11 o'clock at night, and he'd sit with me, you know, 1-2 hours at night. There's about a two-week period towards the end of Jackie's life, and he was there. And I knew, being the young guy, he had the early Mass the next day, but he would come and spend time with me. And he clearly understood the beauty of marriage, although he himself had never experienced it. What I would say is, you know, in a pastoral setting, it's never, not never is a strong word, it's not useful always for the priest to tell personal life stories. It's not useful.
Mm-hmm.
However, what I have experienced in the last 4 years, Paul, is that if a couple reads something about my bio, they make the assumption that he's going to understand marriage because he was married. So that assumption is helpful. What I can affirm is, having been married, yes, I'm fully aware as a husband of all the mistakes I made. So what I can say to the men is, hey, guys, listen up. But here's some things I learned both as a husband and then subsequent to that in understanding pastoral care to couples is pay attention to this.
Father, our time has flown by. We're out of time, unfortunately. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you to the listeners of The Rock and you who support the station. What a beautiful ministry in Northern Ohio.
Keep
the torches lit there. You guys are doing great work. God bless.
All right, Father, thank you so much. Father John Mosier, who is the pastor of St. Charles Borromeo, Salmon, Idaho, and a Findlay, Ohio guy. God bless you, Father.
Go Trojans. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is God Calling on AM 1260 The Rock. Join us next week at the same time.
Thank you for listening to God Calling. If you missed part of today's show or you just want to hear it again, go to our website, am1260therock.com, and click on the On Demand tab. And remember, wherever you are in life, God is calling you.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Click on the orange donate button at am1260therock.com.